Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One. It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Ace Man, bald. When I was 16, I cut a hole into tomato and masturbated with it. Either one of you ever do anything like that when you were young?
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Yeah, but just beefsteak, never Roma tomato.
Gina?
Well, you need the rare.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I did cherry tomatoes.
Alex Winter and Jeff Clark, both in studio. Good to see you guys.
Hey there.
Documentary, well, there's a couple, but the one we're talking about right now is called Trust Machine, the story of blockchain, and I was... I have to admit I have not seen it yet, although I love documentaries and I shall see it, and it's good. I'll just talk about it again after I see it and love it. But tell us, describe what blockchain is for those of us who are real bad with computers.
Okay, you go to Google and you type in what is blockchain, and then you spend about 400 years crawling down a rabbit hole, and then you come out of it and you go, I still don't know what it is. I mean, it's basically the underlying digital ledger that drives cryptocurrency. So it's essentially the record of every transaction on a digital ledger. It's basically a verifiable ledger that's held together by very strong encryption. So it can be used for a lot of different
things.
Boring. Exactly. However,
it's actually not. It can be quite miraculous and quite devious.
Yes. And so the reality of it is it will actually be driving most of the things in your life over the next 20 years, but you don't really honestly need to know that much about it. So there's been a lot of hype, a lot of BS in this space, a lot of people saying everything is a blockchain or could be put on a blockchain, which is nonsense. It's very similar to the internet bubble of the late 90s.
Yeah. I do remember we were just talking about the aforementioned Dr. Drew, I guess when I'm to say just talking about aforementioned or that part. But he had like drdrew.com in 1997 and 1999. And he's like, it's worth $50 million. And I kept saying, what is it? And he'd say, what do you mean, what is it? It's drdrew.com and it's worth $50 million. I'd go, how does that work?
And right.
It didn't really work.
Exactly.
It didn't really exist.
However, today we do have Amazon.com, which is a little company that did pretty well. So the reality of it is there's a lot of wreckage. A lot of stuff goes away. But then you do end up with gigantic change.
We are chasing this change. I mean, I'll put this out there and you guys tell me. I started the show by just sort of talking about how fast things are moving and how we're not really prepared for it. From an evolutionary standpoint, we evolved super quickly in certain departments and barely moved in others, and we're kind of chasing it. And Congress and lawmakers are chasing it as well. They can't – got a bunch of 63-year-old guys that aren't really politically computer literate, like trying to figure out what do we do? Is it a monopoly? Should it be regulated? Should there maybe antitrust? Like what are the predictions? What do you think? And are they – does everything eventually become evil – that has the word big in front of it?
Well, I'll say yes to that, but then I'm going to throw to Jeff, who's at Futurism, and this is their stock and trade, so I'll let him answer that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they say, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, right?
Right.
And I think with technology, it's the same thing. It's a double-edged sword. And you're right. We are at this weird point in humanity where everything is changing. Everything that was analog is either digital now or going digital, mm-hmm. whether it's cars becoming autonomous, your old mail being email, podcasts are no longer – or radios no longer, you know, existing. Yeah. We have podcasts. Everything is shifting into that, and that change is very disruptive.
Well, it's also all we can do is sort of look in the rearview mirror, speaking of cars. But, you know, they say like, well, what about all the autonomous cars and autonomous trucks, and it's going to put truckers out of work, and it's going to – but, I mean, we could always go back and look at a version of – guys who make wooden wagon wheels are going to be out of gig
now. Refrigerators. Yeah. I mean, the Iceman.
Yeah, the Iceman. Like, everything's that way. So I think fair-minded people can go, well, there's always been this, and yet progress has always created jobs and generally been helpful in terms of our lives. But all the information, all the time, and everyone being buried in a screen, for hours and hours and hours a day, that has emotional, psychological implications that didn't exist. You know, our life expectancy has dropped for the third year in a row in the United States, which is something that never existed. It's a kind of a good – now, it's not cancer. It's suicides and drug abuse depression and stuff like that. But if think about that, that all there's been is this crazy upward line of life expectancy because – you know, malaria would kill you and tetanus would kill you and like everything, mosquitoes and everything else in his life. And for the first time, probably in basically humanity, without a few hiccups in there, we're actually in this country trending down just a little bit. I think it's 3 years in a row because we're taking our own lives. Like, imagine talking to Jonas Salk about that, or Walter Reed, or some guy who was trying to cure malaria, cured something. He just went, "Oh no, we're going to go down." And went, "A new plague? No, no, we're killing ourselves."
Yeah.
Would they have been able to? And it'd be like, how that wouldn't have made sense. But something with the opioids and something with the screens, right?
Yeah. Well, life is moving very quickly, and you know the reality of it is we don't handle change that well, and change is happening at this accelerated rate, and you know human beings have a way of trying to put things into an either or bucket, and technology resists that because there are a lot of great things about technology that are hard for us to wrap our heads around. They're hard for the average person to understand them. The immediate reaction is to dismiss them. You know, I do actually think that in terms of, you know, the screen epidemics, I've got kids and I'm always wrenching their heads out of various screens. But, you know, that is also shock of the new because this culture is getting tools, you know, thrust in front of it that it's never had before and we're addicted to them. But that usually diminishes as everyone gets used to this stuff and becomes boring. And, you know, as you said about blockchain, the things that seem sort of sexy or get amplified just become the fabric of our everyday lives. We don't even think about them.
The switching gears just kind of quickly here. You were roaming the halls of Jimmy Kimmel Live for quite some time when I would come in and out of there. And we're a little bit ships in the night, but they always go, Alex Winter's over there, and he's directing this, and he's directing that. How many years were you with Kimmel?
I was only there a couple of years. I came back. I had a production company in the UK, and I came back to the States and shifted all my business over here back in like the early 2000s. And so I was shooting stuff for Jimmy while I was shooting commercials. So I was shooting a lot of the fake trailers, a lot of the kind of fake ad stuff in like early to mid-2000s. It was super fun.
Yeah, it
was a great environment. It was a ton of crazy people there. I mean, you were coming in and out. Bobcat was working there. There were all these Ruben Fleischer. There were all these people kind of floating in and out of the building at that time. So it was a fun place to hang out.
My favorite memory of weirdos over there is my buddy Ray worked there for like 10 minutes. And that guy, there's like inspirational story guy, and he's the guy who was in the wheelchair, and he was missing his arms pretty much from mid bicep down or elbow down, and but yet he had some kind of fly or bench. You know, he could fly or wrestle. You know, he could wrestle a guy. He was one of those like overachiever. And you know the stories where like, hey, he's playing nose guard for his high school football team, but he's blind.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And then the coach goes, I'm telling you, this kid could make it in the NFL. And your job is to go like, okay, yeah, that's sweet. But not to get him a tryout for the Titans, right?
Exactly.
Like he isn't actually going to play in the NFL.
Oh, how great.
Well, somebody said to my buddy Ray, hey, that guy in the wheelchair, he's got no limbs, but he has so much upper body strength that if he tried to touch his two nubs together, no man could stop them from touching it. And Ray's like, oh, yeah? Well, he just met the man. Right. And the next thing you know, Ray's on top of a guy in a wheelchair.
Right.
And they're fighting it out to the death.
And he's got a job.
He's working there.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, it's 15 feet from the stage, and this guy just got done going on stage, and Ray's on top of him on the wheelchair,
nice.
And they're fighting.
Very nice.
Yeah, so it was a time when they had a lot of fun personalities. It was sort of like the Raiders in the 70s or something.
Yeah, yeah. Quickly forgotten, but you're glad you were there.
Something like that. So also the doc, the Panama Papers.
Yeah.
That's I found that to be pretty interesting as well about all the money that was being laundered or going offshores or whatever.
Both, yeah.
This, well, so my my thoughts on all this stuff is, of course, this has to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I'm talking to Dylan and he's like, Vladimir Putin is taking his money and he's putting it offshore. I'm like, of course. Mm-hmm. Yes, of course. He's not fair. Nobody's paying their fair share. And that I yelled at him that I would be surprised if Putin was not engaging this behavior. What is the broad strokes of that, and tell us some people we might be surprised to find out that we're on that list.
Well, I mean, it's really a systemic – it's a systemic network of corruption. That's really the surprise, is that it's you're dealing with trillions and trillions of dollars, not just the odd person you would expect that's just socking some money away. And when it's happening on that level, it basically creates its own economy. So what you realize is that tax shelters, money laundering on that kind of scale is creating its own economy. Basically, you create an economy that takes all of the infrastructure away from not just our country or third world country, every country. So when you're talking about healthcare, education, roads, clean drinking water, all of those things would be solved, federal deficit, all of those things would be solved if this system was not in place. And the complicity of that system is almost every single bank in the world. It isn't just the Putins or the Assads of the world. It's, you know, people that you know who work in banks. It's lawyers that you know that basically create – allowing this network to exist and making money off of everything that flows through that system. So if Putin and other bad people are flowing billions of dollars through that system, these banks are taking a chunk of that. Lawyers are taking a chunk of that. And next thing you know, that is your economic system. So that's really the problem. It isn't so much just like, oh, here's an individual here or here's an individual there. Yeah, it took governments down, Prime Minister of Iceland, Pakistan, Cameron essentially got ousted over it in the UK. You know, there are celebrities in there, most of whom don't know that they're even in there because their business manager's like, I'll save you a few bucks and stick your name into, you know, into an offshore.
Well, that's what – when I was funny, I was saying to Dylan, he's like, Putin's in there and banana dictator number three's in there. And I was like, of course they're in there. That's what they do. I said, give me some names who I'd be surprised if they were in there. And he was like, Emma Watson. And I was like – okay.
Bono.
But I'm assuming their people are doing
exactly
it.
And, yes.
And it's kind of a, of course, because if wherever you live in Europe or the United States or whatever, if you are a big earner and you're going to pay 50% or 40-something percent or more than 50% in, and someone goes, hey, I got a way around that, you're going to go ahead. Don't tell me about it, but
exactly.
Go ahead. And that's the nature of human beings. And so, again, everyone in Los Angeles never, you know, everyone in Hollywood never stops talking about how everyone should pay their fair share, and then they jack up the taxes, and then everyone goes to – I mean, I drove Bryan Cranston to the Burbank Airport to fly to New Mexico season one of Breaking Bad. It was like – He lives in Studio City. He didn't want to go, but it's like that's where they're going.
Exactly.
And that's the nature of the – if you think about it, you take the fairest, kindest, most progressive, level-headed, everyone pay their fair share group on the planet, which is Hollywood – and Bryan Cranston, and they go to the airport to go to New Mexico to film a series. So if they're going to do it, imagine what Putin's going to do.
Right, and everybody in between.
And everybody in between.
Yeah, and I think that the thing that people don't get is how it affects the individual, not just the working classes, but every class. And I think that's the problem, is that we've allowed the system to just expand with the kind of mentality of like, well, screw it, bad guys are going to do that. But then what you end up with over time is a massive network that's encompassing tens of trillions of dollars. It's a huge amount of money that's sloshing around the globe that's not making it back into the economy.
Well, I'll tell you who really suffers. Guys like myself, your garden variety millionaires.
Right.
Your basic Joe
humble
six-pack, but something nice, you know, nice IPA.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then people look at me and they go, you make a bunch of money, so I know you got some sort of fancy accountant and lawyer and they're taking care of whatever. And it's like, no, what I get is lose-lose.
Right.
What I get is pay 50%, no fucking breaks, and get yelled at as Rich Whitey and told to get to the back of the bus.
That's
lose-lose for me.
Yep.
I'll take the slings and arrows, the verbal slings and arrows, if I can get the money offshore, or I'll take the praise and pay the fair share. Right now, I get
you're going to get either. Yeah, none of the above.
Yeah,
yeah.
Just a rich white guy paying my taxes, trying to get along.
Sucker.
Sucker.
Chump.
Chump. Because I think when they, I don't know what the over under is, but you gotta make some real. Because we're weird because we have our definition of rich is like, I don't know, our 1%. I think you got to get to like $350,000 or something to get to the 1%. So then we start going, well, the 1%, they're not paying. They need to take care. It's like, oh, no.
No.
Most all of the 1% is paying full freight. No. It's that 1/10 of the 1% in the 1%.
That's exactly the point. It's really the 1% of the 1%. You're dealing with a club that people think, oh, I'm going to get into this club. Like that's sort of the American dream. I'm going to get wealthy enough. You're never going to get into that club. That door's never going to open for you. You're dealing with levels of wealth that are almost unimaginable. That's really the crowd that's behind these systems.
So what we have to do is either shut down these offshore companies or get me into the 1% of the 1% and keep it going.
Right, or you can be our mole.
Yeah. I'll be the mole.
Sure. Yeah. Triple agent.
Give me an eye patch.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'll go in. Yeah. I do a French-Canadian accent that's out of this fucking world.
We'll tie a rope around your waist and we'll throw you, you know, onto the other side of the light.
Hermione has left the building.
Exactly. Right? Yeah.
Part over.
So is there any – who would – so then you have to go, well, now who would shut down something like this? And then you realize, well, all the most powerful people in the world are engaged in this. So who's going to shut this down?
Yeah, but that's the beauty of that. That's, again, one of the upsides of technology is we live in an era of whistleblowers and leakers. So when your data, when you have these systems that used to be so well hidden that now can get exposed with the flick of a switch. And that's what happened in this story. The Mossack Fonseca leak was the biggest data leak in history, and it exposed the entire network around the world in a second. That's a problem for criminals or unethical behavior of this kind. Then you've got law enforcement all over the world, governments all over the world cracking down on this. Last week, 170 police officers raided Deutsche Bank in Germany because of the Panama Papers leak. This week, the U.S. started to indict and arrest people again over the Panama Papers leak. It took a couple of years for the wheels of justice to grind their way to get this far, but things are happening. Prime Minister of Pakistan's in jail now because of it. Iceland, he's gone. Brazil fell apart. Things are happening.
Is it sort of tantamount to, like, in this day and age, really because of technology, celebrities can't really have real meaningful affairs. Sure, we can bang other celebrities' wives.
Just don't use your iPad.
They're fucking our wives.
Don't use your iPad while you're connected to the house Mac account on the network.
Saying, like,
the
they're
Wi-Fi.
The real victims.
Frank Sinatra back in the day or Dean Martin, they just walk into a club, pick up a couple floozies, take them back to the hotel. Now it'd be all over the internet. Yeah. It'd be all, I mean, it'd be impossible for George Clooney to be carrying on. And I mean in a way where it's like, hey, I'm in town, I'm playing, I'm shooting a movie for a couple of weeks. Hey, how about you, young cocktail waitress? It's undoable now, right, because of this technology and exposure?
I mean, almost everything's – a lot of those things are undoable. You know, a lot of people talk about the dark sides. We dealt with this on Trust Machine, the dark sides of sort of the blockchain. What if you put everybody on a grid? What if you put refugees on a grid? Isn't that bad? Because even though you're helping them, doesn't it ultimately mean it could become an Orwellian nightmare? Mm-hmm. And what I always tell people is, like, we're already in that Orwellian nightmare. Yeah. That ship sailed a long time ago. We're already in a massive surveillance panopticon. We're in it. Like, all your information is already on the grid for anyone to get their hands on whenever they want. We already live in a world sort of post-privacy.
Well, I kind of do the same, like, when people talk about, like, I don't want the government knowing blah, blah, blah. It's like, when my twins were born, they were assigned a number from the government so that the government could take money from them for the rest of their lives.
Yes.
So they've been doing it for a while. I got a number. Yeah. You got a number. Yeah. We all got a number.
Exactly.
And the government knows it, and you got to pay them. So with that in mind, I'm not interested if they know what I'm looking at on the internet, and I'm not interested in where they know I have a gun. I'm not interested in any of that anymore because they already know everything.
They do.
They know everything.
Yeah. Of course. And so do the hackers in Macedonia living in their mom's basement.
Well, and the blockchain doc, by the way, is mind-blowing. And for somebody who knows nothing about it, now I can – almost talk. Maybe I can get two questions in and maybe answer them. It's really, really amazing.
Oh, thanks.
But it makes you wonder between the Panama Papers and this, you know, who are the good guys and who are the bad guys? When we talk about checks and balances, you know, the government's saying, you know, Bitcoin is bullshit, and they're like, well, they have a lot invested in that that they might lose.
Right.
Exactly. So it's like, who do you believe, and who's lying, and who's helping, and the hacktivists and the activists.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to figure out who you which road you should go down.
It is, except
and who to
for
follow.
I think that if you have, you know, your own set of moral values and you stick with those values and you keep an open mind, you can start to find your way through this world, I think, fairly easily. It's actually pretty small. Yeah. And even, you know, there are a lot of people in the government now who are coming onto the side of the cryptocurrencies and beginning to figure out ways forward within that space, realizing they're not going anywhere. Blockchain, some form of a ledger, is not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. It is going to be fundamental to a lot of what's coming, regardless of whether it looks like this or not, whether it's drdrew.com or not.
Or it's now down to $48.7 yeah. million. Dollars. Yeah.
So, I mean, it is confusing, but I think that, you know, if you stick to your own values, you sort of find the sides that do make sense. You do.
I'm going to tease a question for you. You know, I hear, you know, there's a lot of Zuckerberg and guys like that, and everything's a lot of good vibes and cool signs and happy workplaces and stuff like that. Well, if you think about what everyone is pushing forward now, you know, whether it's Subaru commercials that are made,
right.
The car, station wagons made with love, you know,
yeah.
And all the sort of good, the general good vibes, the tip of that spear is like all these tech companies, you know, it's just people bringing their pets in and playing ping pong in the middle of the day. And just think about the Google sign just itself. It looks like it'd be on the box of a kid's toy, right?
Yeah.
Like there is nothing sharp, angular, or like we get it done. Like, you know, like Gillette makes razors, like boom, swords, you know, bow, Gillette, right. You know, we'll cut you. Like there's signs that are like, they're like, boom, yeah, you want some? We're Gillette. Bring it,
come
bitch.
Come on, Remington.
Right. Like when I was a kid, it was literally like swords going shing and stuff like that.
Totally.
Now it's like a bunch of pastels and lowercase things and everything, like good vibes. And if 20 years ago or 30 years ago, and I said, I showed you Google, I just said, showed you this, I go, what is this? You'd go, they make kids' toys.
Yeah.
Or
cereal?
They make kids' apparel or onesies or what are they making? Cereal? Yeah, like something goody, fruity crayons or something. So that's what they're pushing that out there.
Yeah.
This is basically my Ellen theory of life.
Right.
Like, really? Do you really like dancing? Or do you really want us to think you like dancing? Because I don't think you do a lot of dancing off stage.
Right.
But that's just me. So you put the whole good vibe thing out there.
Right.
But why are you pushing the good vibes so hard? What is it that lurks behind the good vibes? And don't other companies just run themselves as companies? Why are all the good vibes getting pushed out? And is there, and maybe there's nothing, but what's going on, what's lurking in the shadows with some of these big tech companies, and what might we look out for? First, it's a good segue, LifeLock. Ooh, you need to protect your identity. They're out there, man. Better Business Bureau warns you to watch out for holiday scammers, bogus emails with links to lookalike websites and social media gift exchanges. Plus, the grandparent scams, they're scamming, they target seniors, and they pose as family members who need money urgently. Let's not get caught up in this. Let's not. It's the holidays, so you're exposed, so you're out there, so your information's out there. You need protection. That's LifeLock. Good thing they have that identity theft protection. It's the power of Norton Security. Protects all your devices against cyber threats. If you have a problem, their agents will work to fix it, but I bet they won't. And you won't, because they are LifeLock, right, Dawson?
Of course, no one can prevent all identity theft or cybercrime or monitor transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock with Norton Security is the right choice to help look out for threats you might miss on your own. Go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LifeLock and use promo code Adam for an additional 15% off your first year. That's promo code Adam for an additional 15% off at LifeLock.com.
So, Jeff, you were sort of queued up to speak on this?
Yeah, I mean, that was a great segue for Facebook there. About
Our Facebook, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think with a lot of these Silicon Valley companies, they don't necessarily think about the ultimate outcome of what they're creating.
Mm-hmm.
And we at Futurism talk a lot about how do we create a positive future. And I think initially they go into that thinking, you know, the same thing. But as they get deeper and deeper into it, they don't realize, much like with Facebook, that you could throw an election or an entire community now is going to be thrown out because of a group that now has gained all this popularity on Facebook. You know, I don't think they thought about the fringes of what could happen. They were just trying to get more money, more users, more advertisers, as grow as fast as they can. I mean, Mark Zuckerberg said it himself. His theory was move fast and break stuff. Mm-hmm. And he didn't care what broke as long as they were moving fast. And clearly that's has come back to haunt them now. And I think in the coming year, I think we will see an even larger backlash, especially in the UK with Facebook and Cambridge Analytica and all of these data mining companies that influence us every day. And not just on elections, but the products we buy, what we're thinking, you know, all of that is so heavily influenced. We don't even realize it at all.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, Adam, but you were of the opinion at one point that whatever would happen with Facebook, Cambridge Analytica didn't affect any votes or something to that. Again, I don't want to speak for you, but what was it you were?
I was saying there's much talk about Russians hacking the election and hacking into like sort of doing pro-Trump and pro or negative Trump or pro-Hillary or whatever it was, like it was a direct correlation. And it turns out that the lion's share of it was just for general chaos and disorder, that there was a percentage of it that was like vote for Trump or don't vote for Hillary or vice versa. But
or just pushing some other, you know, message.
The larger one was for just discourse
divide
and chaos.
Just hate each other.
Like a lot of hate groups and this group's on the thing. But you tell me, is that what you found or what you understand to be true?
I think that's part of it, but I think people are underestimating the power of Cambridge and how deep the analytics actually went, and also how easily influenced we are as humans. You know what I mean? We all statistically stick to one or two issues, and that's what we vote on. We all have one thing that really gets us. And if you have all the analytics from me for the past 10 years of my life, you can very easily look through that, and you know exactly what's going to like turn me on or off or vote this way or do that or not buy that or buy this. That's the power of these algorithms that no one truly understands.
The scary part to me, and we're going to have to all change pretty quick, but how sort of pliable and fragile everybody is. Like there's something wrong with me and I don't have like proper nerve endings or something. But like I talk to people all the time and they're like, oh, I'm going to get off Twitter. And I'm like, why? Because I'm bummed out all day. Like I sob openly. In front of my children. I'm like,
fighting with trolls all day.
You're 51. What are you doing? I openly sob. And I'm like, I'm on Twitter. I get a few that-a-boys and a few fuck yous. And I sometimes explain the fuck you. And sometimes I say thanks for the that-a-boys. And then I shut my phone off. I go to bed. Like, it's hell out there. It's hell. And I'm like, it is? It doesn't seem like, I don't know. Like, I don't know that we're going to be able to change the way we communicate. We can change how we receive at least some of it. Now, I get the part where we're being manipulated by the sort of invisible hand.
Right.
And I get that sort of part where if I saw 1.5 sushi commercials during the day, I'd be like, what? Tonight we do sushi. Well, what do you mean?
Because it's popped into your head?
Because it's high time. Boy, because I run this household.
Right.
Like, I definitely, all I have to see is like 1.5. Yep. You mentioned, actually, now I'm eating sushi night because I said the word sushi 3.5 times.
Highly suggestible.
But the part where we're going to all get into fist fights because of Twitter and Facebook and everything else, or the part where you show me pictures of your Hawaiian vacation and I get insanely jealous and now hate you, we're going to have to do a little better job in our own wiring, right?
Yeah,
as adults?
I think that's a really big part of it. I think that it was sort of what I was saying before about the shock of the new. I think that we are, you know, we're used to sort of being siloed in our own little villages, you know, and with all of the political ramifications of what we care about and our friends care about. Now the technology has penetrated all of those villages and kind of flattened everything. And some people can handle that really well. Some people get completely overloaded by that. The emotionality of that information, not just the information, but the emotionality of it. And I think that there is going to be a reduction in that just by nature, and that as new generations come up and they're more used to sort of processing the information that comes that way, I do believe they'll be less susceptible to being propagandized by that information, because they're like, oh my God, you're in my face with your political views and I don't know what to do. My kids, especially my younger kids, are pretty good
at dismantling the nonsense and not even – they don't even think about it. Like I remember back there was a – there was a term like multi-platform was a term like mm-hmm. 10 years ago. This idea that oh, how are kids going to be able to discern between a movie and the screen and the mm-hmm. TV? And it's like, and I watch my kids, and they don't think that way. They don't think multi-platform. They just watch stuff. Yeah. Right. They don't care whether it's on TV or the movies. They're not thinking the way old people like right. us think at all. So I think that there's a generation right now that was very susceptible to Russian disinfo campaigns, to America's – I think – I'm with you. I don't think there's any evidence that the Russians literally influenced that election in a way that that votes were changed. I think that – I would argue that American disinfo campaigns were at least as effective as Russian, yeah. if not more so, and there were many of them, and they've been going on before there was an internet. So there's all kinds of crap that's coming at you during an election. But we're now dealing with trying to wrap our heads around, oh, the Russians are coming at us through Facebook. I think the idea of that just scares the crap out of a lot of people.
You answer that question with the skill and precision of a seasoned sushi chef. I will say that.
I'm hankering for sushi.
I rarely use that as a reference, but it was amazing the way you diced up that tuna.
That answer was eel roll good.
Yeah. Wow. That's right. Dynamite roll. Jeff, now I'm definitely having sushi.
Me too.
1,000%. So, Jeff, where I have so many questions, department. Is this a true statement? In the past, big industries like automotive, like you take Ford or GM or something like that, or whatever big something in the past – for them to meet their demise, it might take 50 years. You know, it would just take a long, slow whatever, but they're still so big and they're so mechanical and analog that it's like it couldn't be over in a week or a year or a relatively short period of time. And I think if you look at like the automotive sector, you go, well, Ford was, you know, 80% of the market, then they dropped down, but now they're kind of having a renaissance, but it was tough in the 70s or whatever. If you're a Facebook or Google or whomever the sort of invisible company is, in the sense that you work in the ether, you don't have, you know, steel plants and mm-hmm. you have vast amounts of real estate in Michigan and stuff like that. Can you go fast? I mean, can we go like a celebrity that was, oh, that guy was big, and then he punched his girlfriend, and he got the DUI, and then he made a couple of bad cop buddy movies, and he's got like a joke now? Like, can it go? Can Facebook just go away in a year? Can we get on to something super cool? Can they get embroiled in some horrible Me Too thing or something? Like, can it happen that fast with tech, or is this an insane idea? Yes.
Brian? Before Facebook, it did. I mean, you have Friendster, you had MySpace, and then you had, Facebook's the one that figured it out was more than just, you know, connecting with your friends.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, MySpace is maybe not a great example in Friendster as well. Facebook is an actual company with many shoot-off companies. Mm-hmm. MySpace was Tom.
So they're like too diversified.
It's too diversified, and I think like Alex can even speak to this because he knows the guys that came in early on it from his previous films, but they made it a very legitimate thing with heavy, heavy investment from the beginning, which is unlike a lot of the other companies. And I think they've hit collateral mass too much. So Google is, in my opinion, never going to go away. Mm-hmm. Like, it's gone too much. They own us more than we own them at this point. I think Facebook is similar, but I think with the backlash that we've seen lately and how they've handled it and just how everyone feels used by Facebook, I think has cut into some of their business, but I still use Facebook every day. Futurism publishes on Facebook every day, as does every other major publisher, because you have to. You're forced into it, and you need, in the media landscape today, you need revenue from every possible source you can find. And every publisher will tell you that, from CNN down to Futurism.
Do these companies, you know, I've always sort of said, when I argue, when sort of talk about the government wants this and they want you to do that and they want more money or they want more taxes or whatever, I've always went like, who's smarter and who's greedier than guys who run huge businesses? Like, right. Good luck fooling them into giving you more money. They move. and they move to New York, and they get New York to give them a whole shitload of breaks and a whole bunch of incentives.
China or Ireland or whatever.
They're all they're really good at making money, and they're really good at getting out of reasons to pay their fair share. Then there's some like weird kind of nefarious shit with I guess it was Amazon going to New York. They were like, we also want to be alerted if anyone's looking into our business. And New York was like, all right, we're with you on that. Like, it seemed kind of a weird relationship that the state would go
protecting them.
Yeah, if anyone's sniffing around, we'll tell you.
Well, like, because Amazon is notorious for testing your product and then stealing it from you and manufacturing it themselves. So of course, they want to know if anyone's looking into it.
So
absolutely.
That's why they have
a 47% market share.
I always want to
on the internet.
I want to write a book or make a documentary called "What Happens When You Become the Man."
We will help you, the man.
Because you always become the man.
Exactly.
You have to become the man.
Yeah.
You all start off as good vibes and great ideas and change the world, and then you get a whole bunch of shareholders, and the next thing you know, you just do all the stuff. And all the guys you complained about, Carnegie and all the guys that came before you, you just do a tech version. You do the exact same thing they would have done.
Completely. Yeah, I mean, the tech revolution of the 90s and the 2000s is a perfect example of that. You know, we saw this the desire to create a democratized culture for artists and the consumer and all this, and we ended up with, you know, just to look at the music industry, a much less equitable industry than the previous one, which
it's
was already screwing artists over really badly. And now the new boss is arguably significantly worse than the old boss.
Getting a percentage of a penny for each play of a song.
And who's making the money is actually, you know, the people bang in the middle of that exchange, and not anyone, no one's benefiting on either side of that exchange.
Well, now it's kind of interesting, whether it's offshore accounts or tech, whatever, or Bitcoin or whatever. Everything is kind of invisible now. So, and again, you can, I'm a lay person with all this stuff, so I just have thoughts. But I mean, when somebody said, like, I want to buy this Indian reservation, I want to run a train through it, you know, like people go, people would see it. Like, they still would do it, but they'd go, we don't want so much of that. I mean, we're seeing you're dumping your raw sewage into the river because you're making ore over here, and now the fish are floating to the top. Like, I can smell sulfur coming from the river. Like, people by the river are dying. You know, like, there's something. With the tech world, I feel like everything's just going on, and everyone's going, I don't know. Well, I don't know what they're doing.
It's data.
Tie it back to the Panama Papers. Just think about us in our daily lives. How much money, like physical money, do we see and handle in our life? Like, between income, direct deposit, and money we spend, a rent, mortgage, restaurant bills. Well, how much actual money coming in and out of our lives do we actually handle and see? Very, very, very.
Almost unless none, it's Jimmy Kimmel's money, none.
That's right.
Less than less
money.
That was an insult to my daughter. Knowingly, I mean, she didn't know that she was insulting me, but she had me. She hammered a gift certificate that Jimmy got her for her birthday or for Christmas for $100, although it'd been tapped out.
She's very good.
I've been tapped out, but I paid her $100 cash.
Right. Oh, really?
Well, $100 cash for a Jimmy Kimmel gift certificate and for Amazon, and it was zero.
Right.
And then
it's brutal.
It's brutal. And then when I pulled the cash out, to cash it out was a whole bunch of merch money I'd made, like on the road selling books and T-shirts. And I thought, well, that's a good lesson and story to tell. And I said to my daughter, guess where I got all this cash? And she went, Jimmy? And I said, no.
Isn't that how people get cash?
It's just they wait around for Jimmy to bring over cash, right?
Hard up.
I think she just assumes. Anyway, it's That's sad. Hilarious. But she – all right. So it's invisible now.
Yeah.
And I've always said when you were trading pelts – you were pretty careful about who you gave those pelts to or how many pelts they took or whatever. Now it's invisible. I've probably been buying the Major League Baseball package for the last 9 years and have no idea I'm even doing it.
Right.
It's just coming out of the account, you know what I mean? And somebody's not telling me. I probably have 9 gym memberships I'm paying for every month and have no idea. And it doesn't.
You're a part owner of the Dodgers.
Oh, that's awesome.
Right, you're a minority owner.
It doesn't sting because I don't.
I
don't feel it. I don't handle it. And I know these guys know this, right? I mean, they have to know that our relationship growing up, you know, with lemonade stands and here's a quarter, son, and keep the change and all that kind of stuff. Now, you know, in the Jerry's Kids hopper at the 7-Eleven, you put a few pennies in, as oh, it's almost full of change. You know, yeah, that's my mentality. Right. Now I'm dealing with invisible money. I'm not up to that yet. Maybe the kids will, or maybe they won't.
Well, it's one of the reasons that we so desperately need checks and balances. It's one of the things about the Panama Papers story that was significant was that, you know, you had it was the largest coordinated act of journalism in history. It was 400 journalists working totally encrypted for a year. Great risk to their lives. One of them did get killed on that story. And, you know, exposing that world of ether that you're talking about, whether it's data or actual money, you know, value of whatever kind, it needs to be seen. There needs to be transparency, and that needs to be communicated to the average person. And that's mostly coming from journalists. You know, certain wings of law enforcement are doing that. Certain governments will get involved in doing that. That can swing either way depending on their motives and whoever's running that particular government at that year. But that's the reason that it's so important that we have like thriving news organizations and journalists that were able to actually, you know, get past, you know, this horrible era of fake news and actually report what's going on. There's no other way of knowing what's going on.
Do you assume, like, when they talk about, like, well, ICE didn't exist until 18 years ago or 9/11 or whenever it was, like, these things didn't exist, or the Marines didn't exist, or the Air Force didn't exist before we had the Army and
CIA
and
or
whatever. Like, yeah, these things didn't exist. Do we need some sort of cyber patrol unit?
Isn't that what Giuliani's doing, though?
Ah!
Jesus Christ. I mean, by the way, we have one, okay? But they didn't re-up it. They fired him or whatever.
Yeah,
they
had a head of cyber.
I feel like we're going to need more cyber cops than real cops. I mean, like, even at the border, because they're going to be flying drones and doing our, you know, computer. They're going to be robots that shoot pepper spray out of their penis.
I've got that already, actually.
Oh, you got the strap on?
That's what I got with my Jimmy Amazon gift certificate.
Hey, you know, it's so funny. I'm such a horrible parent where they're like, how are you going to punish your daughter? I'm like, oh, there's so much more to punish her for. Like, that's nothing. That's
ship is zero.
Oh, what are you going to do about Charles Manson stealing the bag of Funyuns? That's not even – we'll get to it when we may not even get to it.
Yeah,
like, I'm doing such a horrible job of parenting that I'm not even counting this. That doesn't even fall on the punishment side of the ledger.
You're Bugliosi. You had a whole list.
Yes. I had a whole docket. All right, let me tell you about Castrol Edge. Heat, friction, viscosity, breakdown, rob your engine of maximum performance. Friction results in loss of performance of up to 10%. Castrol Edge, engineered with fluid titanium technology, it physically transforms to become stronger under pressure. Helps fight friction, deliver maximum levels of performance. Three times,
fool.
Stronger against viscosity breakdown than leading oils. Castrol Edge, unlock the true performance in your car's engine. Yeah, Gina, forget about the news today.
Oh, we need to talk about what's happening right now.
These guys are too interesting. Yeah. Where shall we be in a few years? I mean, what do – you know, I'm sort of thinking about this sort of movement – where I keep saying a few years from now, we're going to have safe spaces and octagons. Like, there is a group that is going, fuck it, I'm zigging if you're going to zag. If you guys are all going to be watching you porn 9 hours a day, I'm going to go fight a dude in a dojo and then do a tough mutter.
What
and
about
then,
both? Can't you do
that? I can combine my two loves.
Exactly.
A niche porn called the dojo porn. An aishidoshi. Yeah, and then I'll hang out with Nick Offerman and make a kayak for 40 grand.
Exactly,
like,
why not?
I feel like there's a group that is going and they're breaking off and going, I'm... Like, that M. Night Shyamalan movie.
The Village.
Yeah. Like, there's going to be villages, right?
Colonial.
Yeah. I think we've got them already.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot.
Do we?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a documentary, actually.
Yeah. There's a lot of kind of pushback to where things are going that are forming all these different kinds of communities all over the world. Some are like hyper techno oriented communities. You have crypto communities. You have people who are anti technology. You have pro government anarchist groups. I mean, I do think that one of the the end results of massive change like this that's happening so swiftly and the fear that comes with it, you know, what's going to happen with AI, what's going to happen with robotics, it does, you know, humans always act the same way. They always they go a little bit potty.
Right.
And so we're going to see more people going a little bit potty for
right.
sure.
Yeah. And I maybe this always existed. And, you know, maybe when the automobile was invented, there was a whole group that went, fuck it, I'm riding my horse,
yeah.
you know.
And the Luddites. There's always been groups that have rebelled.
Yeah, and I think in the future we're going to have analogs and digitals. I think a lot of what we're like trying to figure out now is what is our real world self, our physical self, and what is our digital self? Mm-hmm. And how do those work together? Are they the same? Are they different?
Yeah.
Same as our avatar?
Absolutely. I mean, think about it. When you get in those fights online or something, it affects your real self, mm-hmm. even though it's just digital.
Right.
You know, so are they the same? Are they not the same? We have to figure that out. We have to be adults about it. And we're not. We're just fighting against every little bit that we can, and something goes crazy, and half of them go that way, and half of them go that way, you know?
Yeah, it probably doesn't help that everyone is getting really thin-skinned, because the thing about being thin-skinned and announcing, you know, you felt threatened, or you felt marginalized, or you felt attacked, or you felt whatever, in the past, if you were super thin-skinned and you always felt attacked, then you just didn't leave the fucking house and you'd be fine. But now we're bringing the criticism to your desk.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you are thin-skinned. You no longer need to deal with bullies outside on the schoolyard. You can stay home and be bullied alone.
Yeah. Right.
Yep.
The pops notion alert on your phone.
Yeah, the notion that you can just bullied. Sit in your ergonomically correct chair and be bullied alone.
Yeah, the walls have come down. That's for sure.
It's scary for the thin-skinned out there, and I would
and for the radicalized people who are easily radicalized. Same opposite spectrum.
Sure, I would argue that everybody is going to have to thicken up their skin and focus on their compass. Facing true north and not let it be little magnets, little refrigerator magnets, pull it all in different directions all the time so easily that you had a little more purpose. Yes.
More compassion.
But on the and on the other
compassion
exactly,
couldn't hurt.
On the other side of that, you absolutely need to have more perspective and have thicker skin. But you think of the people on the other side, like we just did that Pete Davidson story where it's like you're at home, you know, eating Cheetos, watching TV. I'm just going to fire off a quick tweet that this dude should kill himself. You know, so we're getting jaded and brazen on one end and thinner skinned on the other end. So that's not a good combination.
As we talked about, he gets the beat off to banging Ariana Grande. And I, sadly, last night, whacked off to Pete Davidson fucking Ariana Grande. So
I swear,
so meta.
I whacked off to Pete Davidson whacking off Ariana Grande.
Oh!
That's weird.
No, I cut out the middleman.
What time was yours?
Street lights were definitely on, but my kids were awake, that's for sure. They're clawing at the door. Almost broke my stride.
Can't unsee or unhear that.
Yeah, it's a world, and I know everyone just says, like, unplug, but man, you got to, because we are all part of one vast experiment, and we're all volunteering for it.
Yeah.
You know, that's the scary part. In the past, you could sign up for something or not sign up for something, and there was a payday or whatever. This is, we've all signed up for it, and we don't know we've signed up for it, but we're in.
We're in it. I mean, I think that is really the bottom line, is we're in it, and there is no way to shut it out. There's no way to get off the grid. There's no way to turn yourself away from kind of the information age and the world that we're heading into. Mm-hmm. We are all in it, and so we have to adjust to it.
We are going to essentially have to build the physical or the mental equivalent to a treadmill that we use in our home, which is, in the past, we just went out and gathered and hunted and ran and moved and did whatever, and there's no necessity for a physical treadmill or an elliptical or anything. Yeah. And then at a certain point, we realize, oh, we have cars, we have jobs with air conditioning, sedentary life. So look, smart people, we're going to have this place, and you're going to go here, and you run on this treadmill, this sidewalk that goes nowhere. You're going to go run on it for 40 minutes, or we'll buy one, put it at your house. Like the richer people would just buy one and put it at their house, and I'll go run on my thing. And I don't think anyone walked up to anyone running on a treadmill and went, what the fuck are you doing? You're not going anywhere. They went, I'm burning calories. I'm not atrophying. And no one is ever confused or whatever.
Yep.
There's going to have to be a sort of psychological, emotional version of that, which is, hey, here's what healthy people do. They unplug their shit. They go outside. They take a hike. They throw the ball to their dog on the beach without their phone with them. Like whatever that emotional treadmill, psychological treadmill is that we don't think we need.
Yeah.
We need it. Yeah. We got to start getting on it for 25 minutes a day.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think that's something I instill in my kids, but it's really important. And you can develop a sense of what is real and what is BS news. You can develop a sense of when disinfo is coming at you. And sometimes it comes at you from really stupid places. Sometimes it is like
sometimes you can
run propaganda.
Sometimes you can just physically not be able to receive info because you're in your freezing cold swimming pool, macchiata, screaming in agony like I did this morning.
For example.
Meanwhile, my daughter's just sold this same Jimmy Kimmel gift certificate to Amazon for a fourth time.
Yeah.
To a special needs kid at her school.
She's going to run this country.
She actually put on a surcharge saying this is an actual Jimmy Kimmel gift.
That's right.
It's another 20%
certificate of authenticity.
All right. Let me tell you guys. How do we even bring it home? I will tell people the documentary, Trust Machine, The Story of Blockchain. It's directed and written by Alex, and Jeff's a producer, and it's coming in 2019. TrustMachineFilm.com is where we go. TrustMachineFilm.com. The documentary, The Panama Papers, that is available now on Google Play, Epix, and in select theaters, so you can find that as well. And what else? Are we missing anything else?
The End of the World? Did we talk about that?
That's tomorrow's show.
Okay.
It was implied. All right. I'll tell you guys to check out Simply Safe for your home security. Simply Safe. Two eyes in there. It's exactly what home security should be. Great protection. Ridiculously easy to use. No hidden fees or pricey contracts. Get yours at simplysafe.com/Adam. Live shows coming up. You can go to adamcarolla.com and find out where I'm going to be playing some live shows and check out Chassis, our little company. We make some docs, and they're up there. Two S's and a Y. We make and other docs, curate other docs that other folks make. So check that out. Say hi to Lynette over there at Corolla Drinks, doing a great job on Mangria. This Friday, December 7th, South Bay Customs, El Segundo. Lots of music, lots of Mangria, silent auction, endless rant. It's all going to be there. Dawson, you're leaning into a mic?
Yeah, we. My job for a day, the bidding is up to $1,700. Somebody is going to pay for charity to do what I do here every day. That's pretty awesome. Fun. Follow me on Twitter at Dos Angeles or Corolla Drinks, and you'll get all the information. But yeah, Friday night, Loxy's playing, I'm playing, Roses and Cigarettes is playing, Sanguine and Shiny, and we have Mangria slushies, which are the greatest thing that ever happened.
Yeah, and Mangria slushies lead to Mangria sloppies, which is what happens to people when they drink the Mangria slushies. Also, you can get some cool merch at CorollaRacing.com. I'm wearing the hat right now. So until next time, Adam Carolla for Alex Winter, Jeff Clark, Gina Gradenball, Brian, saying mahalo. Crawl back in your mom's pussy and take a nap.
One thing I forgot to tell you about this Friday night, the Ragin' Cajun food truck is going to be parked out in the alley. So if you're hungry, we got some good Cajun food, jambalaya and stuff like that. All right, stick around. Coming up, today's episode of Good Sports with Dave Damashek and Adam Carolla. Did you miss out on the Carolla Christmas crate? What can we say? We told you they'd sell out. Good news is we've got another deal that will brighten up the holidays for the ultimate ACS fan in your life. From now until Tuesday, December 11th, you'll be able to get the limited edition If You're Offended shirt with a 3-pack of Mangria for only $50. Head to CorollaDrinks.com now to get yours. And this time, heed my words, we will sell out. Happy holidays from the Adam Carolla Show.
Ace and Shecky, let's do it. Good sport.
The Podcast One Sports Network presents Good Sports.
Hi and hello, sports fans. Welcome to a brand new episode of Good Sports here on Podcast One. Dave Damashek here, Adam Carolla over there. The Christmas holiday is fast approaching. All the Christmas fun specials. Remember that, Ace, growing up? Was that appointment viewing in your home? I mean, I hesitate to ask because I could imagine that your mom might not have the TV guide and say like, oh, guess what? Santa Claus is coming to town's on tonight. We would be in our jammies and we'd be down there and they would go like, the usual programming on CBS will not air tonight in favor of the Christmas special. Ooh. Santa Claus. Yeah. And the color spinning on your screen. You had black and white.
I did. It was a big deal. It's funny. I remember the insanity of, you know, my childhood versus today. I mean, my life today. So, you know, like when I left the house, this morning, my wife announced that the organizer lady was coming later today. And I just hear this is somebody I'm paying. But I also, I have these thoughts of like, or we could just be organized. Like, you could get an organizer, or you could just start being organized. Like, I'm organized. You could be organized. We don't need a third. She's going to basically tell you what I've been saying for 15 years, that's which exactly is please right. get organized. That, just that put is your a, keys in the same
here's
spot.
Here's a helpful hint. You might want to put, you might want to group things. This is one of those nonsense professions.
It's sad. And, you know, we have dog walkers and organized. Well, I walk the dog. But the point is like we've had a dog. The notion, when I was a kid, my grandmother subscribed to the TV guide. Mm. And she had her TV guide and she would highlight stuff in her TV guide. And every, you know, once a week, my grandparents grew up, my grandmother's house was close to my house and my mom didn't like to cook and I liked to eat and they had a color TV. So I like spent a lot of time over there and there's like a lot of talk with my mom. Like, could we borrow the TV guide? Well, I'm not done highlighting it yet. Well, we just want to peruse it for a second. Well, okay, but just make sure you put it where I can see it before you leave. I don't want you. Well, just take it to the house for a couple. Like a durable good. Like if it's at
people, there are people who collect TV guides. There are people who like never throw them away. It's a very weird thing.
It's a big deal. Like, hey, don't touch the TV guide.
Yeah, right.
Grandma knows what page it's on. She's highlighted all her shows. And this notion of the notion that this rag that would show up, it was probably $1.49 a month. It would show up once a week. And at the Carolla household, this was a big ticket item. This is like a Learjet to other families.
Yeah.
This TV guide. And there's a lot of symbolism to it as well. Like, where are you going with that TV guide? Like, I'm going to Mexico. I'm going to start a new life. I'm going to sell this TV guide. Like, where are you really? This is a family member. Do you not really?
The funny thing are those little write-ups, too. The TV guide writer is some gig.
Oh, that was one of my loveliest conversations with my grandmother many years ago when something, and she remembered, she said, Man Show, not any favorable reviews from the TV guide. And I remember going, oh, I read that review. It wasn't bad. And she went, not good. And I was like, I read it. It wasn't bad. And she's like, And I remember, like, why are we having this argument in your entry hall about this review? And aren't you supposed to be rounding up Grandma? But when those shows would come on, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer,
that's what I'm
and
saying,
all that stuff,
yeah.
And this was literally Puppamation, Claymation, some of the worst, boringest. If I took my two 12-year-olds and said, You have to watch Santa Claus Coming to Town, Frosty Snowman, and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Yeah, that's the heat miser, and that's the snow miser over there. And they'd burn the house down. They'd fucking burn. My son would like take his cigarette out in slow motion and just flick it into a kerosene-soaked pile of pallets, and it would just go up like a bonfire. No one would get out of the house.
It is. You are so right. I tried to show it to my older kids. I love Santa Claus is Coming to Town. I think it's far superior to Rudolph. And so I tried to show it to them because Burgermeister Burger is great. Like, yo-yo. I love it, yo-yo. I have been bamboozled. He's great. That guy,
Burgermeister,
really,
Meister Burger. Yeah,
he's the best. He's a real.
Well, man. You have fond memories of the Burgermeister and the Meister Burger. I have tragic memories, not because of my horrific deprived childhood, but because I was a ceramics major in high school. Because my counselor, Mr. Tomey, knew I had the goods in the brains department, so he suggested, why don't you be a ceramics major? And then also knowing, you know, the future. People talk about the future being computers.
Mm-hmm.
Ceramics. That's where the money is. You know what I mean? I mean, that's where the big money is. You could start getting into coding and doing other nonsense like that, and that's fine as a hobby. But when you're talking about making money.
I'm trying to help you, Adam.
Talking about
where I see you. 20, 30 years from now.
Ashtrays, saucers, coffee mugs, all ceramic.
Trying to help you be the best you. Go into ceramics, boy.
You get out into that world and you don't know the difference between a pinch pot and a coil pot. I feel sorry for you. Good luck is what I'm saying. So Mr. Tomey knew that being a ceramics major would pay big dividends in this modern progressive world we're living in. And I was a ceramics major, so I had two ceramics classes. And John Taylor, not from Duran Duran, made...
The not Jerry Rice, the other Niners
right,
receiver.
Right, right. And not a Duran Duran, John Taylor?
No, there was a Taylor right. Duran.
Yeah, not that guy. He made Mr. Heat Miser out of clay.
Ooh.
And then at some point, somebody desecrated his Mr. Heat Miser, like took the clay and like mashed their fist into it. Then what happened was, is a chain reaction. People thought it was that guy. So then they exacted their revenge on that guy's clay project, you know. And it wasn't that guy. So that guy thought it was another guy. Nobody knew. Everyone had lockers. None of it was done in front of anybody. Somebody took my goddamn prize possession at the beginning of class. You'd buy a brick of clay. The brick of clay was like 12 inches long, 6 inches by 6 inches. It was just a brick of clay. Chucked it out of the second story window. No. It landed on the storm drain, the grid, and just mashed it into it. Somebody else took a number 2 pencil and shoved it into someone else's, like spiked.
Yeah.
It was a goddamn free-for-all where everyone was just mashing everybody else's projects because Tyler, Mr. Heat Miser got destroyed. And
never a resolution to this?
Everyone got their shit destroyed, and that's all there was.
And no one ever went into a career in ceramics, I'm guessing.
I haven't followed up on every single student.
It was too ugly an episode. They had to put it behind them.
We had to cleanse our minds of it. So I wax nostalgic for Santa Claus is Coming to Town and all those shows. But there's a part of me that'll never be healed.
I feel for you, and I'm sorry I even brought up such a sore subject. It is so weird, though, that probably the guys behind the glass even are too young to remember how important it was, the urgency of seeing it, because you couldn't like delay it even for 5 minutes, let alone watch it next week. You either watched it right then or you just didn't see it. So you had to sit in front of the tomorrow night. Tomorrow night is Rudolph's on. Like, we got 8 o'clock. We got to be
no pausing.
Bath and everything ready to go.
If you like went into the kitchen and your sister would start screaming, "It's coming back on!" You'd go sliding across in your little footsie jammies. Ah, simpler times. Mm. I'll tell you what. I'll say something that's good about newer times. Geico. Everyone's got the to-do list. How about you add save hundreds of dollars on your car insurance? You don't have to go anywhere. Just go to geico.com. 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance. Take that extra money, put it in your pocket. It is Geico, geico.com. 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance. It'll be the best thing you do all day at Geico. Yes, Shaq.
All right, no good sports coming to you on Friday. We will be back with a full row of shows for you next week. Until then, for Adam Carolla, Dave Damaschek, Good Sports Podcast 1, and Ceramics out. Good Sports!
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. Subscribe to Take a Knee. You get a weekly dose of inspiration and motivation. Click the link at AdamCarolla.com. For tickets and info on the live podcast, mandatory events, books, movies, and more, go to AdamCarolla.com. And stay close for AP News.